So, Berto, this is chapter two in which we review our own memories, the timeline, my outline here of the events that led up to and through and after, well, not after the pandemic, because it's arguable that we're
still in it,
still in the pandemic. And I'll get to that later in terms of what defines a pandemic. But this is chapter two. So let's continue where we left off. What do you say, Berto?
Let's do it.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirkana. I'm a therapist and a professor.
My name is Humberto Castañeda, and I grow carbonated avocados.
So February 28th, we're post-Seattle Dragons game, XFL. By the way, little wrap up on that. The XFL did not survive the pandemic.
No.
there had only been five games over five weeks.
Man.
But The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, and his ex-wife actually bought XFL.
Really?
And are starting next month, February
2023. Really? They're bringing it back?
Yeah. And they also allocated a team for Seattle, but because Seattle Dragons, but Dragons, I was like, okay, you know, I can see, because we're also nerds and, you know, Wizards of the Coast, Seattle thing. I thought, okay, I can get behind Seattle Dragons, but they changed the name to Sea Dragons.
Well, okay, no. See, I like it because, you know, Seattle Sea Dragons, I like it.
All right, so February 28th, this is pre-lockdown. I am still in a place where I'm thinking everything's fine. Everything's going to be okay. You're...
By this point, it's over for me. Like, I'm seriously, like, I just dodged the Disney bullet. I am now actually considering not going to work. I'm literally thinking, I might not want to go into work. But they haven't told us to stay home yet. So I'm, like, still...
At this point, was
the office.
Was the Life Center by, you know, the Kirkland Life Center?
This is where it started.
Was it late
Yeah, it was
February?
Late February.
So there were news reports of...
And this is in my neighborhood, blocks from where I live.
Right, so a perfect storm for you. You're already prepared, and now the virus literally just down the street from you.
Right, and I'm thinking, because I am actually...
So if you don't know, just to let the listeners in, the news story, not only in Seattle and Washington, but also in the nation, was that Seattle was where the virus was only.
Yes.
Now, it wasn't necessarily only there, but that's where it was being talked about. And not only was it the Seattle area, which was actually north of Seattle, about, you know, an hour north of Seattle in Everett area, but the big outbreak was just blocks down the street from Berto's house in Kirkland at a retirement home.
Yeah.
And so that was the big story.
This is a place where it's not just retirement. They take care of elderly that have health issues. So it's really like the worst case scenario. Elderly people with pre-existing conditions,
right,
all together in a place that's not ready or prepared for this at all. They get hit.
It's the middle of winter. It's not being ventilated.
I know. And they get hit so hard, they start dropping like dead. Mm-hmm. And now I am thinking, oh no, not like the worst I thought is actually upon me. This is the zombie apocalypse.
Oh wait, actually I skipped ahead, Berto. Can I interrupt you? We'll get there in a second. So my outline was a bit effed. Okay, February 19.
Okay.
Rewind the clock.
I'm back from Disney.
Wee 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 wee.
I'm back from Disney and I'm going, whew.
Yeah.
Dodged the bullet. Although actually I didn't know enough to know that I didn't know if I had dodged the bullet, because I might not find out for like 5 days.
Yeah. So February 19th.
Yeah.
You're back from Anaheim.
Yeah.
You come over to my house and we record an episode on on health anxiety.
That's right. Yes.
I had been prepping this episode for months.
Yeah.
It just randomly coincided with the very beginning.
Right. And we were going to talk about me having been sick in January, you having been sick at Mardi Gras.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't. This is before Mardi Gras. This is before Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras, I left the next couple of days.
Okay.
We both have health. We were going to talk about your general hypochondria, my milder, but still there hypochondria.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about when you were flossing and you thought you had a tapeworm. We're going to talk about how you will various times have, you know, aluminum foil hat. And so we talked about it. Coincidentally, this episode on February 19th was the last time we even saw each other in person.
That's right.
For 16 months.
Oh my God, that's right. I didn't even think about that.
So it's this weird coincidence, because again, it wasn't like, oh, there's this coronavirus, I'll do an episode on health anxiety.
No.
I've been prepping it for months. And during the episode, Berto.
Yeah, you brought up COVID.
I brought up the novel coronavirus.
But you were actually addressing it as in, well, this is one of those cases where people like us with anxiety could get extra worked up.
Right.
Because the media like makes a big deal of these things.
Right. Well, I was even being a little more obtuse. I was railing, not terribly, but against the panic that was happening in the media, because I was comparing it to Ebola.
I wouldn't say, knowing what I know now, I still wouldn't say you were being extra obtuse, because I do think that the people that were failing us weren't the media, wasn't us. It was, like we already said, there were very informed scientists that were in a position to talk to people that should have been in a position to lay down some rules.
Yeah.
We are not those people.
No. Yeah. No, I don't blame myself.
Yeah.
But so we record the episode, and it's still up, and I find it to be a great episode, and it's also interestingly situated in time. It was one of those times where I had a bunch of episodes recorded already, and thus, after I edited it and prepared it for publication, it wasn't slated to be published for a couple weeks.
Right.
During those couple weeks, I went from the coronavirus is no big deal,
right,
to holy shit, this could be a thing.
Right.
And so I actually went back to the editing room and actually muted that out that entire section where I'm basically saying the classic idiot things that eventually would be parroted by Republicans for the next year, which is, it's just like the flu, it's no big deal.
Well, I don't know if you remember because I don't know if you reheard it, but because I was sort of in a weird spot there, because I didn't want to put on my tinfoil hat.
Yeah. Okay. So this is Berto, there are times when I feel like I can't trust you entirely, because I understand why, because I would describe you as someone who's pretty honest, but you hold your cards pretty close to your chest. Like when we had our 12th or 13th, I think the 12th anniversary, and you were really going through a horrible health issue, 13th or something, I overheard you a year later talking to Stacy saying about how miserable you were that day.
But if you hear that audio again, though, like this is something we should do, is I actually said, and I don't exactly remember, but I said something along the lines of like, I'm not sure this one's going to be the same kind of thing.
Okay.
But I was in this, I didn't want to come out on the podcast and be like, dude, we're all doomed. We're going into lockdown.
But think about how interesting it would have been if you had. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're supposed to be the honest, off-the-cuff,
But I was trying. We actually had a moment where, if I don't remember.
Did you re-listen to it recently or something?
No, I just remember in the moment. That was a big, prominent moment in my head.
Yeah.
So
I didn't even know that was happening.
We didn't call it a debate because we didn't rat hole too long, because you actually just wanted to keep moving.
Yeah.
But there was a moment where I was trying to like say, well, no, because like normally flu is this and that. And then we just kind of like kept going. But I was like, inside I was like, oh, I wonder if I should.
Well, it probably wouldn't have gone over well with me at the time.
No,
because the data was from this extremely dubious source.
Right. You know? And I would have said, like, well, you would have said, like, how do you know this? I'm like, well, I watched this YouTube video.
Yeah.
And so that's why I knew that I didn't have like the credentials, because that was the other thing. This is one of the things I was so pissed off about. I didn't know shit. So I was sitting there going, like, if I can piece this together, not knowing anything, with these dubious sources, why the fudge are people in better positions of power not doing this?
So I listened to a podcast called Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Yeah.
In fact, for those, I've said this before, that Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, if you're familiar with the podcast, was a major influence on me even starting a podcast 14 years ago. I do Tougher Bluffs. That's a direct ripoff from their most long-standing popular segment called Science or Fiction. And I also modeled myself after the podcast, in that you have a central professional, Dr. Steven Novella, who is a physician and a professor. And he has his best friends and his brothers, who are with him on the podcast together.
Right.
That's what I did in the beginning. You know, I'm the central professional, and then I have friends that are loudmouths, you know, you and Lita in the beginning. And so I've been listening to them for 16, 17 years religiously. They come up with an episode every Saturday. It's I think less entertaining to me now than it was before, but it was in 2007 when there was so little out there. This was like a really big deal in my life. And so during the pandemic, Dr. Stephen Novella, he's one of those people that prides himself in knowing everything about everything, but particularly around medical science, which it's his, and he's also a professor at Yale.
Okay.
And is in charge of teaching people and also the internet on the, I think he's mildly obsessive, similar to me in this way. But since it's his wheelhouse, he would every week update on the newest research and outlook about the virus. And so I was throughout this whole time pretty much just adopting Dr. Stephen Novella's perspective.
Yeah.
And he at this time was not saying things that you would have said.
Yeah.
He was saying, well, we don't know. It looks like it could be bad. There could be maybe 100, maybe 200,000 deaths in the United States, but there's no reason to panic yet because just we don't know. And there's not a lot of reason to panic, but it could be bad, but it also could just be another Ebola scare. We don't know. And obviously, they were going over all the science, the R-naught science, and there just wasn't much data yet. That's the other thing that I want people to remember is that at this moment, we did not really know anything about, we knew very little about the virus. There were, you could have speculations based on anecdote, but science doesn't work that way. You need all the data.
Yep.
You need to, and it's not like you can put a scanner on the world and say, oh, that virus was transmitted through the air. The reason why we know the virus is transmitted through the air is through circumstantial evidence. We can't measure the virus traveling through the air. I mean, you can measure viral load on droplets and stuff, but you can't really know if it's enough to get into someone's body. What we do is we go, well, that person we now know had the virus for the past week. They were in a small room with five other people for 2.5 hours, and all of them also got the virus. You have another person over here who also had the virus, and they were outside with five people, and only one person got the virus. And you cobble together literally millions of data points along those lines, and you say, oh, clearly, if you're in a small room, you are more likely to get it, and thus the hypothesis is that it's transmitted through the air. That's how we piece together the reality of this virus, and at the time, we had none of that data.
So the reason that the videos that had an effect on me is because the dude, instead of what I not only think his normal content is, because later I kept following that channel, and then later on I started realizing, oh, wait a minute, because there was this whole other bent to the channel, and it's really about like Illuminati conspiracies and all this other kind of stuff. But the way that those videos were presented, he was actually going over like, okay, here's the information we have from this case reported. So this person was in a meeting in Paris, and then they left. And then the following patients showed up, and they were like, it took 3 days for incubation. And then they showed the graphs. Here's what the SARS one did. Here's what this one is doing. So it looks like the curve is faster. So I was sitting there like, you know, I'm interested in science, going, okay, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah.
Again, I was like, well, maybe this is all full of shit, but he wasn't like randomly saying like, but, I've seen the signs on the tea leaves.
But you still went to Disneyland.
But I still went to Disneyland.
And risked your wife and your kids.
That's right. That's right.
So you obviously weren't.
And like I said,
you weren't 51% sure. You know what I mean?
No, it's worse than that. I actually was like 60% sure. And yet I took the risks.
Why?
Because I felt so dumb canceling a Disney trip.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I felt...
And you're a very strong person.
Normally, yes.
So,
but, you know, never so in our lives had we encountered something like
that. Yeah, but that's interesting because I think that also points to another psychological phenomenon, which is that when it's such a novel experience, no one wants to be that person who sticks their neck out, even though they're 60% sure, even though death is literally on the line
like,
of your children, Berto.
Like, do you know they interviewed me? The local news channel interviewed me coming out of Whole Foods towards the end of February?
No.
Right when people were starting to go and buy a lot of stuff. I had already done that. We had already bought extra stuff, so I wasn't in a run.
What'd you extra buy?
Well, we bought, you know, some toilet paper. We bought some extra food. We had extra water.
Like,
we had
how much toilet paper did you buy?
We did not go crazy, okay. But we bought, like, you know, some extra, like a couple extra packages or something. But this was like, I think it was like...
How did you know to buy extra toilet paper? Because that's the first time we've had a run on toilet paper.
Because it wasn't just toilet paper. I went to Whole Foods.
You just bought a bunch of everything.
A lot of everything.
Okay.
It was later that month.
So canned food.
When everyone freaked out, and then all of a sudden there was no toilet paper.
Yeah.
But I was going to Whole Foods just to buy some extra stuff. Coming out of Whole Foods, they interviewed me, you know, just like local news interviewed me. And like, what do you think of all this stuff? And this is now at the point where, so I don't remember the exact date, but definitely the lockdowns weren't in place yet, but we knew about the old folks home.
Yeah. So let me get to that. So let me get to that. We're almost there. So you and I record this episode. We don't know it at the time, but it's the last time we'll see each other in person for 16 months. We'll record podcasts over Zoom. Then I go to New Orleans 2 days later.
Yeah, which is crazy. I thought that was before that.
To Mardi Gras.
Oh my gosh.
February 21 to 26. And me and Stacy did it up. We were at the epicenter of the parades right there on Canal Street.
Oh my God.
Right, you know, the parades were right outside our door of the, I don't know, the Hyatt or something.
Were you nervous at all about it?
No.
Not at all.
No. I mean,
I was biting my nails at
So I'll tell you when I got nervous. It was when I went to Tahoe a week later than that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I still wasn't I was nervous by then. But so New Orleans, so again, it sounds bizarre. And I'm a scaredy cat when it comes to viruses. But yeah. because I'm listening to Dr. Stephen Novella weekly give me updates, and it's totally in their wheelhouse. In fact, I should go back and listen to those episodes, you know, because they have them still up. That the way he was talking, it was like, well, there's no reason to panic now, and there's no reason to take action now, but you might have to do something soon. At least that was the impression I got, you know? And so I just, you know, went along. And the precedent had already been set by Ebola, by H1N1, that whoever figures this shit out, they'll figure it out. You know what I mean? Like, whatever needs to happen, it'll happen, and it'll just be a worry that happens and it goes away, because that's always what happens. So plus I'm moving away from Seattle. I'm going to Louisiana. This is far away. This is you know, 1,000 miles from
viruses from Seattle. Don't travel that far.
Yeah. So now it would later come to be known that Mardi Gras was the super transmission event in the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh no.
The data, it's hard to really cobble it together. Gosh. But like, one of the data points is that when they ran tests on a sampling of people a week later in New Orleans who had COVID, the strain, the exact, because you know, we have variants, but within a variant, there are several subvariants.
Yeah.
And
Right now there's a subvariant called the Kraken, which is scaring people.
Is there really one called
the Kraken, which is apparently even more transmissible than Omicron, but not necessarily, it's not worse in terms of symptoms or anything. Yeah.
And I remember Stephen Novella talking about that too. It's that typically with viruses, when you gain one strength as a virus, like transmissibility, you lose killability.
Yeah.
And anyone who plays the game Pandemic knows all these different things.
Everything I learned about pandemics.
Yeah. Which I've never played, by the way.
I did play. I actually, a few years ago, I was quite addicted to it on my phone.
Yeah. It's always been a game that has been suggested to me on Steam, but for whatever reason, I don't know. So when they look at the different strains in different cities in around the world, New Orleans, in that month post Mardi Gras, almost everyone had the exact strain, which suggests that it was
same origin.
It was the same origin, meaning that a small group,
from Seattle,
maybe
brought it down to Mardi Gras.
Now, I went to the hospital, with massive symptoms of a skin rash.
Yeah,
there were some small cases reported, you know, few cases reported of, because, you know, the COVID symptoms are varied. Some people have no symptoms. Some people have the classic ones. Some people lose their smell. Some people don't.
Yeah.
And there were some cases, apparently, of people developing a skin rash because they got COVID. So, it, you know, I never had the antibody test. So it's possible. It doesn't seem likely because Stacy, I guess Stacy also could have gotten it. And but anyway, the point is that go to Mardi Gras and the whole time, all I'm doing is packed together with millions of people. Bourbon Street. I did it up.
You did the whole thing.
I went to Bourbon Street several times. I went into several clubs. I have a friend that goes there every year because his wife is a part of old Louisiana, old New Orleans, old Mardi Gras. They're in the parade, one of the parades. They do the whole costume thing. And it's this, it goes back like 100 years to this old sort of fraternal system. Super racist, by the way. And so, yeah, I was just packed together all these people. Obviously, the airport, no masks, no, you know. But I'm fairly hand washy and and but obviously breathing in everyone's everyone's air. So I get back, and then February 28th, a high school student at Henry M. Jackson High School in Mill Creek, which is up near Everett, Snohomish, is confirmed as having the virus, and the school closes immediately. So this is the first time. An institution, I think, in the United States, had you had the Life Center in Kirkland that was already having some issues, but this is a whole entire high school with probably 2,000 students and staff and parents, all complete shutdown.
By the way, at this point, I am very frustrated because the schools in my area are not shutting down. So this is because now it's now late February. I've now passed. Like if we had recorded our podcast at this point, the whole podcast, I would have been like, the world is about to end.
Yeah. And by then I probably would have been like, maybe.
So at this point I am irate. I am going. And this is something I actually really deeply regret. That Life Center place. I actually posted on our neighborly Facebook thing. I made a post.
Have you taken screenshots of this?
You should find it
because this is an historical document.
But I'm very embarrassed of this one because I made a post about the
But you're
Life
that
Center.
One person who is actually, you know, you're that person.
And
on
you should have seen the replies.
On the corner who's like screaming.
I got lambasted, But I made one post about Life Center and I was railing against the administration of that place really hard. Because I was saying, like, this is unacceptable. They should have seen the sign. Like, I was really standing on my soapbox. And
well, was it found that they were irresponsible?
Well,
because you could argue the naivete was understandable.
That's the reason I would say, like, that's why eventually I was like, I was being too harsh, because knowing
plus
now,
we don't know. Do we know exactly what they did? Step by step.
No, it's just what I'm realizing is that, man, and just word to the wise, if you have an old folk in an old folks home, go and inspect it yourself, like really take a tour and look, because they actually don't have, they didn't have any provisions for an eventuality like this. And so they were so unprepared.
But, as a lot of places were.
But that's the thing. It wasn't just them. And but I was so upset at the time. I'm like, because now for a month I've been stewing on this, and now it's the end of February, so I'm like, everyone should know this now. So I was upset at the school districts. I was upset that they hadn't sent us home from work yet. I was like, God damn.
Yeah, I mean, so if you would have said that to me at the time,
at this point you probably would have started going like,
I probably would have been like, well, it's reasonable, but I still wouldn't have gone along with it. That's what's so weird about these few weeks is that. The mindset and the perspective was so drastically different from day to day, which we'll get into.
And by the way, that's when they interview me. So it's right around the end of February.
Okay. And what do they say? What do you say?
So, you know, like, hey, hi, what are you going through your mind? What do you think about COVID? Blah, blah. And
were they calling it COVID? They're probably calling it coronavirus.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah. It took a while to get rid of the coronavirus label. You know.
What do you think of the thing? And so I said, I said, no, it's serious. It's going to be hard. I'm out here. It's like, are you loading up and stuff? It's like, no, I already did that. We have provisions, but Yeah, I think it's going to be very difficult.
So at the time, was there kind of a run at the supermarket?
That was the, when all those news, yeah, or the news about people doing runs. But it wasn't, like, I think it was a week later when everything ran out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at this time, it wasn't like people running in and out of the place. And it was, no one was wearing masks yet. I think I was not wearing a mask yet. And they were interviewing me. They aired it that night. My mom got a call from a friend of hers. Your son's on the news. But they cut out the parts where I was saying, oh, it's going to be really bad. They just had me going like, oh, well, you know, I think we got to, you know, come together as a community. And really, I think we could probably pull through this, you know. That's what I was saying. But I had also said, it's going to be really bad. And they cut that out.
Funny. So it makes it look like you're all optimistic.
I sounded very optimistic.
But you weren't optimistic.
Well, I was optimistic. Well, like you, I was thinking, I mean, the government's going to kick in any minute now.
Yeah.
I was, at the same time, I was a little worried about who was in charge. But I was thinking, well, but that's at the president level.
Yeah.
What about all their local government?
Like, yeah.
Things are going to kick in.
We have... often Democratic mayors, yeah. Governors.
So that's why I was worried. I thought, you know, stuff's going to get bad. At the same time, I was thinking, but, you know, we'll pull through this.
Yeah. Okay. but you're like, it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
But everything.
And I was definitely, I was like, because people were still like, oh, we don't know if we're going to shut down. I'm like, oh, there's going to be shutdowns.
Yeah. And for people, just fast forward through the story, Berto and I never got it.
As far as I know, I've never tested positive.
I think there's a good chance. I would give it a 80% chance that you and I literally never got it.
Never got it?
Because
could be.
The times where it was possible that we did, there's no other infections around us. Do you know what I mean?
The only thing that I still can't explain, but it... So, you know, in that January 27th of 2020, I got really sick, and that's when I went to the ER. Remember, that's the time.
Yeah. But you were also, it was kind of a classic episode of your thyroid problem, right?
But I didn't know at the time, and yes, it is likely. But they ran thyroid tests at the time.
But they did that other times too, didn't they?
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, it's possible for sure.
It's possible, but who knows?
But also, the fact that you didn't live in Everett, do you know what I mean? Like,
but it was down the street from the other epicenter.
Yeah. But and I'm guessing that a worker from Everett works in the Life Center and could they brought it because it was pretty localized with how transmissible it was and how literally no one was taking any precautions.
Not only will you and I never know, the hospital didn't know what I had. My doctor to this day thinks it could have been, but doesn't know.
Yeah.
And the thing is, when I asked the doctors, including my endocrinologist, do you think that was my thyroid? They looked at the numbers and they said, probably not.
But they said that at other times too. So because your thyroid would fluctuate so fast, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing is, if we did, you and I, have COVID, our symptoms were so...
different.
Strange.
So strange.
Yeah.
So strange.
If we had a classic, even just one of the classic symptoms, then we could raise the possibility higher.
Absolutely. As an example, I had shivers for days, but no fever.
Okay.
No fever.
But you also had no cough.
I had zero cough.
And
I had difficulty breathing.
Oh, you did?
But not cough.
But you did have difficulty breathing.
But not like, and my oxygenation wasn't low.
Oh, okay.
But it was just, this is why.
Fatigue.
I was extremely fatigued.
Well, you're more in the direction than I was. I mean,
I had a rash that was.
And I had a giant po' boy.
Yeah.
Sandwich filled to the brim with crawdads. In Seattle, we call them crawdads, which apparently is sacrilegious to call them that in New Orleans.
Okay.
So I just keep saying crawdads because that's what we said growing up. Because we would literally go to the creek and capture crawdads. And I also was tested for an allergy to crawdads and shrimp and lobsters because they're bugs of the sea. And was found to have an allergy. So for me,
it's quite likely.
Yeah, it seems extremely.
And again, mine did. Yes, I had this and that and the other. But at the same time, I didn't have, like, the most common was sore throat, fever, and a cough.
Right.
And I didn't have either of those.
Right. If you were asymptomatic completely, and I guess you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Then I would consider that because if you had some symptoms that are definitely explainable by the thyroid thing. I don't know. It just seems...
And they can be.
Yeah.
And then all the other colds I had, which I didn't have many during the pandemic, I never tested positive any of those times.
Yeah.
So as far as I know, You and I haven't.
Right. Yeah. So I would put money down. I mean, there's no way to know.
Only my wife had it.
Only she the universe. Tested positive. Yeah.
Which she isolated.
Yeah, yeah. So let's take a break when we get back. Yeah. Let's almost get to March. What do you say?
Let's do it.
So to finish off my notes from late February, I have so we have the closure of the high school north of Seattle. We have the Life Center in Kirkland. Seven of the nation's first nine COVID deaths are going to be linked to the Life Center in Kirkland. You have pretty scary situation just down the street from you. How far is it from your house? Like a half mile-ish?
I don't want to say.
Oh, right.
Because I don't want to be that specific.
Yeah, yeah. Then we have late February, around the same time. California health authorities have also confirmed that two people in California died from the coronavirus before the United States reported its first death in late February of 2020.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden you have panic buying of masks, hand sanitizer, and toilet paper.
Yeah.
Which you apparently had beaten. I had not. Stacy and I.
Were you guys out there trying to score some paper?
No, I didn't bother.
Okay.
One, with. I just waited. It didn't even occur to Stacy and I to hoard. It just didn't cross our minds. So, you know, we had a supply of toilet paper that ran out maybe a month into the lockdown. Trying to find toilet paper at that time was rough.
Right.
And I remember we managed to get, if I remember right, some, like just four rolls mm-hmm. we got from Amazon from like this random seller.
Yeah.
And there was this really weird off-brand of toilet paper that we got.
Oh my God.
I actually took a picture of it because I'm like, my God, we actually... And I don't know if we ever ran out, but I think we're close. Okay, so wow. March. Now, I'm teaching at the university in person, of course. I'm teaching at least two classes, and I'm seeing all my clients in person. March 1, we're about to go to Tahoe. At this point, I'm starting to worry because I remember March 1, my friends wanted to meet up because I was going with my friends Broadhead and File and Glover, and we were going to
March.
We're going to Tahoe to ski. We'd had this planned a long time ago, and we were meeting up for dinner on that Friday, March 1, and to just talk about, you know, preparing to go. And we went to a restaurant down the street, and I remember going into the restaurant. It was pretty crowded, and I remember being uptight about it. And no one else seemed to be uptight about it.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of talk of coronavirus, but no one seemed to be internalizing it at all. I was. Our waitress was sniffling.
Oh, no.
Which made me extremely uncomfortable.
Right.
And, but I didn't do anything. You know, I still sat in that
booth.
See,
it's the same mental gymnastics that, because you were asking me, you know, why did I still, and I'm like, I don't know.
But I wasn't. I didn't know what you knew. At
sure,
this point. This is always.
But listen, you are cautious. Yeah. You do know about transmissible disease, and by this time we're talking about early March, and yet you, sat there, and you were like, okay, I'll just deal with it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because maybe this is another sociological phenomenon, which is that you and I are always the weirdos when it comes to health anxiety. We're always the ones who are like, I'm not comfortable with this.
That's right.
And nothing bad ever happens whether we take the precaution or not. We've had a lifetime or however many decades of being that worried weirdo.
Like, don't eat it out of the floor. Ah, you ate it.
Even though we're not wrong in our perspective, we're overly, or you would say on the range of caution, we're at one end of the spectrum. Right. So I was used to being in that zone, and if as a rule, whenever I felt uncomfortable, I shut the whole thing down, I would 75% of the things that I do would be canceled.
Right.
And I would have no friends.
Right.
So it was a very comfortable place for me to be of just like, well, Kirk, you're always the one that's freaking out. And another thing is, even though I consider myself to be a smart person, I also am not beyond normal human folly, which is to incorporate the crowd's mentality into my mentality. No one was doing anything, and especially in that restaurant. And again, we're talking liberal Democrat people, who are concerned with such things.
Well, at this moment, there wasn't yet
any politicization.
Yeah.
So I'm in this restaurant. The waitress is sniffling, maybe even sneezing. No one's blinking an eye at it.
Oh, my God.
My friends aren't doing anything. And so I'm just like, well, I guess I'll just follow suit and just also not do anything.
Yeah.
So I remember that. So that's the first time when I remember really thinking, I don't feel comfortable. Okay. The first cases show up in Rhode Island, Florida, New York are confirmed. So March 1, already it's all around the United States.
Yeah.
And everyone knows at this point, these are just the ones we're catching.
Right.
Right. The second,
so the illusion of like, well, I mean, it's only in China and I guess in Seattle is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I said earlier that 7 of the nation's first 9 COVID deaths were at Life Care Center in Kirkland. But on March 1, the second person of those 7 died.
Okay, so we hadn't yet had all those 7 deaths.
Right.
And by the way, wasn't Italy now under...
No.
Oh, not yet.
Okay. We're getting there.
Okay.
March 2nd. So this is when it gets real micro.
Yeah.
Okay, March 2nd is the last day that I saw clients and supervisees in person. That's Monday.
Uh-huh.
Oh, so March 1 was a Sunday.
Yeah.
March 3rd, and I didn't know that'd be the last day I'd see my clients and supervisees in person. March 3rd, Tuesday... 9 total deaths in Washington. So you have 2 at the Life Center at Kirkland, and you have 7 at other places.
Right.
March 4, Wednesday, is my last in-person class. Again, I don't know that that's the last time. Fast forwarding, I did have a one-off in-person class in June outside at Carkeek Park and did not feel comfortable. We all wore masks and sat 6 feet apart from each other.
Okay.
You know, this is June of 2020, so it's still a problem, right? And it was nice to see everyone in person, but at the same time, I was like, I don't know if it was worth the anxiety. And then in June of 2021, after we're all vaccinated, because Antioch students tend to get vaccinated, we also met in person on campus. That's kind of a one-off thing. Because that was kind of like my retirement class that I taught.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, so businesses start shifting to working from home, I think, is an option at this point. The downtown on March 4th starts to kind of become empty. So things
that was the last week. That first week of March was the last week I was at the avocado office.
Okay. Yeah. Right. So things are... People are starting to really get concerned, but not terribly. And anyway, so... Then on Thursday, March 5th through 9th, I go to Tahoe. Now, I thought, and me and my friends thought, we're getting away from the coronavirus.
Yeah.
Because it's mainly in Seattle. And I don't think I had heard that it was in Rhode Island, Florida, and New York. And of course, that's far from Tahoe. And Tahoe is, anyway, so we go to Tahoe. If you don't know, it's a lake right in between Nevada and California. It's up in the mountains.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, and there's skiing and there's casinos, and it's like a mini, mini Vegas. And so I get to the airport, and this is, I remember, Berto, I could not find hand sanitizer
anywhere
in the airport. The airport,
that wasn't a thing yet.
No, it was gobbled up. It was all sold out.
I mean, you were trying to buy some and you couldn't buy any.
I was trying to buy it.
Oh,
it was all sold out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I managed, again, I didn't have any at home because I'm not one of those people that has hand. Usually you find hand sanitizer at work, but you don't have it at home.
Right. Yeah.
So I thought I'd get some at the airport. And I finally found I had to run around. I remember I was about to be late for the flight. And again, my friends are just, they don't care at all.
Right. What are you doing? I'm trying to get hand sanitizer.
Yeah. And at this point, the experts I was adhering to, Dr. Stephen Ovella, these others, it was not a breath virus, transmissible virus. It was wash your hands. You know, it was that whole thing, wash your hands for 20 seconds or whatever, 50 seconds. And so I'm thinking, I need hand sanitizer. So I finally get some. And I remember we arrive in Tahoe and we're going to a restaurant, and I am putting on hands. So, you know, I use my credit card. I use a pen. I sign the receipt at the burger stand. I immediately, you know, I'm really worried. I remember sitting at this restaurant that March 5th night, completely alone. No one else cares, but I'm in this bubble of terror.
Oh my God.
Because also, I'm a week after going to the hospital in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And so I'm also...
Oh, right. So you're hypersensitive to things right now.
And I have not been to the doctor yet. I don't know...
You don't know what it was.
I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I was actually allergic to the po' boy sandwich. I'm thinking, was it something else? And so I'm pretty scared at this point, you know? But not too scared to not go and not too scared to go home.
Yeah.
I'm still there, but I remember being pretty.
By the way, you were saying, like, well, at this point, the experts were still just like, wash your hands. That was the other thing that pissed me off, because if you will recall, one of the strategies that they must have discussed at the very highest levels, even as early as that, was like, ooh, we're going to run out of masks. So we got to tell people that masks don't really do anything. Like, that was literally their strategy, was to tell people, because they wanted masks for hospitals.
Right.
So they literally told people that masks don't help.
I think Fauci was a part of that.
Yes. Yeah. And I was, again, the videos, they had science, they had data. Well,
so what they're thinking at that point, who knows what sort of factors they were bombarded with, but I could see a scenario where smart, because Fauci turned out to be a pretty solid, smart, science-based person. But I can imagine him sitting in a room with a bunch of people and they're reading all these reports of even crimes occurring as people are trying to gobble up masks from stores and stuff. And he's also getting reports from hospitals terrified that they can't get their hands on masks.
Yep.
And so you have 300 million people grasping for masks, and you have, 10,000 buyers at different hospitals trying to also... And you have 10,000 against 300 million. So you have to stop the 300 million people from doing that. And maybe the science was like, well, we don't know if it's transmitted through breath. Maybe there's some evidence, but,
But we need them for hospitals.
But we need it for hospitals. So what do we say? Because if we tell the public, look, out of the goodness of your heart, even though it might save your life, please don't buy these. That won't work. And so we have to maybe...
No, you just put a limit. You actually make the statement publicly at the very highest levels that masks are now a national, like they're nationally controlled.
Yeah.
We are calling emergency production into action. Hospitals are top priority and you are limited. So if a store sells more than N number to people, they get, shut down, whatever the hell,
Which, that was even floated, but the infrastructure and the, the system required, I'm guessing, was not in place.
Right.
I mean, by the time we get to the vaccine, which we had a year plus to prep for, it was clear that our government and our public health system did not have proper leadership.
Absolutely, because they ended up with the worst of both worlds, which was they said, oh, masks don't help. And yet we still had a shortage of masks and everyone still bought masks. So everyone still bought the masks, but many people now, even people that would have otherwise maybe been swayed, were like, oh, well, masks don't help. So now no one's wearing them, but they're buying them.
Right.
It's like, worst of all, so frustrating.
Yeah.
And by the way, at this point...
It's also possible that they did have data to suggest that wearing masks was not the priority and that washing your hands was
That's impossible. Because again, now it's March. The data from China was incontrovertible.
Oh, was it?
Masks absolutely helped.
Okay.
That's where I realized...
So do you think they were lying to try to get people to...
100%.
Wow.
That was the strategy that they pursued. They're like, we need... Now, in their minds, they were like, well... weighing the options. Well, we need the hospitals to have to... So our strategy is to lie to people.
Wow.
Absolutely.
I think they discarded that tactic.
Yeah.
Because there was a point later on where, maybe a year and a half later, where I can't remember what point, but it was like the science made it look as though you didn't have to wear a mask at a certain point or something.
Yeah.
They said... hey, the data says that you could probably... Or no. Here's what it was. It was, if you are vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask.
Mm.
And so this is like, with the vaccinations being rolled out, it would be months into the vaccination probably. So they're saying you don't have, but if you aren't vaccinated, then you absolutely should wear a mask. And since a lot of the mask wearing culture was supported by public humiliation.
Yeah.
The worry was from the liberals was that, well, if you say that to the Republicans, they're going to, even though they're not vaccinated, no one knows that because no one has a tattoo on their forehead saying they're vaccinated or not. And they're just going to stop wearing their masks. So don't say that to them. Don't say that if you're vaccinated, you don't need to wear a mask because they're going to stop, because we'll stop wearing them maybe, and they will too. And I remember a lot of people were saying you should essentially withhold that information, lie by omission. But I was under the principle of, look, I get that. But as soon as you start lying, the whole thing gets thrown out.
Yeah.
Because you need to have trust. Yeah. And if there's a reason to discount you, then the opposition is going to capitalize on that. So you can't do that.
And that's the worst, because like when one side was already saying, they're lying to us, they're lying to us, as soon as like something is wrong, it's like, I see, they're lying to us.
Because they were at a certain point. They were lying to us. So as the days progressed in Tahoe, March 5 to 9, I'm getting more and more worried. By the end of the 5 days, we go into a restaurant on the final day, and I don't eat anything, even though I'm starving.
You're starving.
I don't want to touch
anything. Now you're really paranoid.
Now I'm like, okay, so I just want to get home, and I want to, and we're in Tahoe, we're in the casinos and stuff, and no one's from Tahoe, right? None of the customers. And so there's always this question of where are you from? And so we'd be talking to some randoms and they'd be like, where are you from? And you know, the other people would be like, we're from Illinois or something. And then they'd say, where are you from? Or we'd say, oh, we're from Seattle. And instantly everyone was afraid of us.
Oh my God.
So at that time in, you know, March 5 through 9, the narrative was that the only place in the United States that
Seattle
had the virus was Seattle, and nowhere else did it exist, which was not the case.
Wow.
So I get on the plane going home. I'm almost home. There's a young man sitting next to me. He's probably like 22.
On the plane,
sitting right. He's in the window seat. I'm in the middle seat. He has so much snot.
Oh my God, no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
He's sneezing and coughing. I don't have a mask.
You don't have a mask.
Where am I going to get one of those? I'm sitting there right next to him going, well,
this
Well, I'm dead.
Yeah. Like, this is the end.
Yeah. Like, this guy, I've never in my life sat. I mean, maybe I did and didn't notice, but I don't think so. In my life, I've never sat next to someone that was
so
more
sick,
more noticeably and snottingly sick.
And it's quite possibly they had it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna take a guess and say that he didn't, because then I would have.
Yeah.
But it was pretty awful. Tahoe, by the way, closed down a couple days after we got home.
Disney closed down 1 week after we went.
Yeah.
Because they closed down sooner because they were being a little more cautious.
Okay. Actually, so there's a date within the middle of this time, March 6th. So I'm in Tahoe. And in my notes, we've already talked about this bit. So I'm going to read some quotes from Donald Trump. Again, if you want to be a Republican and you just think that small government or Second Amendment stuff, whatever, there's a thing about Donald Trump that is particularly problematic. And you don't have to be a genius to understand what that is. And I also will be full disclosure and say that there are people in my echo chamber, my side of the aisle, that I frequently disagree with. There's all sorts of Democratic things.
There are
pro Wall Street, pro corporation, pro 1%.
But there's a difference between disagreeing with some policies, disagreeing, or even having corruption, right? When it comes to, like, I don't care if the whole system is just crumbled and dissolved, as long as my ego is intact.
Right. You're Mussolini. You're literally a fascist dictator at that point, trying to overthrow a obviously well enough run election.
Yeah.
So at this point, Trump has already been told by multiple experts and advisors for several weeks that SARS-CoV-2 was going to be a huge threat during this time. And here are some direct quotes from him. He says to the public, March 6th, you have to be calm. It'll go away. He also says, anybody right now and yesterday, anybody that needs a test gets a test. They're there. and the tests are beautiful. The tests are perfect, like the letter was perfect. The transcript was perfect.
He literally referenced the letter. It's just, or the call, right? Like,
yeah.
What letter? What?
To Zelensky.
Okay, okay.
So, and the tests are beautiful. So just listen to this.
Oh, God.
And right now and yesterday, anybody that needs a test gets a test. Caveat, that's 100, that's 99% not true. They're there, and the tests are beautiful. The tests are beautiful?
They're beautiful.
What the fuck? What are you talking about?
They're beautiful.
The tests are all perfect, like the letter was perfect. He's now jumping to talking about a letter that he sent to a politician, coercing this politician to investigate Joe Biden.
Like, because seriously, if this is a movie, it's like the comedy is so good.
Idiocracy, the president was smarter than this.
How do you make that jump?
Yeah.
Because I remember, he was at the lab. Wasn't he at the lab? He was at that interview, that quote. I feel like he was at one of those labs.
Maybe.
And he has the scientist standing next to him, and he's like, the tests are beautiful. And just like the letter.
The tests are all perfect, like the letter was perfect. The transcript was perfect, right? This was not as perfect as that, but pretty good. So he says, so he's saying, the tests are beautiful and perfect, but not as perfect as my letter to Zelensky, which clearly is trying to, I'm 95% sure this is what he's referencing, is he was obviously coercing Zelensky, Ukrainian president, to use his hacking system to try to hack into Joe Biden or drum up stories about Hunter Biden so that President Trump, and he was holding millions of dollars in aid, you know, at bay, saying, I only give this money if you actually attack Hunter Biden so that I can become reelected.
Imagine if you and I, or just people in general, operated this way, where anytime you'll ask me a question about something, I intersperse an answer that's hyperbolic with comments about arguments you and I have had years ago.
Yeah.
Randomly.
Yeah. Insecure much? He goes on to say another quote. I like this stuff. I really get it. People are surprised that I understand it. Every one of the... So he's talking about science.
Yeah.
I like this stuff. I really get it. People are surprised that I understand it. Every one of these doctors said, how do you know so much about this? Maybe I have a natural ability. Maybe I should have done that instead of running for president.
So it's just so incredibly funny. If it weren't so horrible, it would be so fun. Because you have this person so unaware of like the reality of the context. Because again, it was that he was standing there with scientists around him. He's at one of those labs and he's saying these things. And you're like, dude, you are the president. What you're saying right now is so ridiculous.
He is the most insecure fourth grader in your class.
It's just so insane. He's sitting there going... Instead of like, you know, okay, here's the deal. We are working night and day, and I personally am supervising. Fine, go that way, right? Instead, he's actually like, I've been told by these scientists how amazed they are about my brilliance about science.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
People are dying. Millions will die after this point. And you're talking about how you know everything about science.
Yeah.
And you clearly don't. This is the figurehead of our nation, the leader of our executive branch, the cult leader of 40% of Americans at this point, and this is that individual.
And because the crazy thing is, look, so other people, like you were referencing George Bush. George Bush got in his aviator outfit or whatever. You know, like, we know he's not flying jet fighters. Come on, what are we talking about?
But he's not that dumb.
But he does it in a way where it's plausibly, okay, you're showing the flag colors, right?
Yeah.
But this is like this whole level, like you're saying, it's a fourth grader's understanding of how to do propaganda.
No, don't put down fourth graders.
Okay, sorry.
He's the dumb, insecure fourth grader in the back row.
Because there is a way in which it's still, you know, nauseating where you can totally do propaganda, right? He can be there and say, you know, thanks to the investments my administration made into science for this government, and we saved because Obama had destroyed the infrastructure.
Like we've been saying, I would have been okay. I would have still smirked a little bit.
Right.
I would have been totally fine if he would have
takes credit.
If he would have bragged about braggable things.
Right. even if, like, again, I don't want him to do this, but I'm saying the more kind of like business as usual is like, you know, when I arrived here, Obama had basically fired all the scientists and I hired them all back. And but fine, lie. Yeah. But this is so obscenely ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is him going,
this is distorted thinking. Like, this is this is when you start wondering about a personality, a characterological disorder. We don't know. I'm not diagnosing it from afar.
Literally, but these scientists told me that I am so smart and they're so surprised about how much I understand.
Yeah. Oh, God. Because the Eddie, even the most hell-bent politician, ideological politician, well, you know, Alex Jones is actually smarter than Donald Trump in that, I don't know about Alex Jones, but the next worst politician would probably calculate, you know, I should probably be careful about exactly what I say because history will show whether I am right now or not. So I should probably hedge my bet a little bit. Trump repeatedly just puts his money down on a particular reality that no one in his circle believes and definitely never happened. And then 6 months later, he's like, I never said those things.
You weren't far from the analogy, like when Kanye West, when Ye, whatever his name is, went on Alex Jones, and even Alex Jones is self-aware enough to go, whoa, no, Nazis still bad.
Right?
So it's similar to that where
there's a line where at least those other people, cause where they, at least their self-preservation kicks in with Trump. He doesn't have, that's what a characterological disorder is.
Right.
You don't even do things that are in your best interest. Because there's so many other ways that he could have prevailed and been reelected and come across as the genius that he thinks he is. He just kept shooting himself in the foot. Anyway, let's take a break. Let's get off of the Trump thing. And let's go to the Italy shutdown after the break. What do you say, Berto?
Let's do it.
So, Berto, I'm looking at my notes. I'm on page 5 of 47. And we're at the end of chapter 2.
We could each individually spend 20 weeks straight, day and night, not sleeping, talking about this topic.
Yeah, clearly.
And not get through it.
Yeah, I knew this going into it because it felt this way as I was obsessing on this topic this past couple of weeks. This is therapeutic for me.
Yeah.
Because there's so much to get off my chest. I've already probably said everything I'm saying right now 1,000 times anyway, but so many things happened and so much was at stake, and there was so much terror, and there was so much death, and there was so much anger and injustice, which we'll get into later. But and there's so much that I feel like I just have to yammer about it.
Well, and this makes it real in a way, too, because like we were saying earlier, how a lot of this felt like a dream or felt distant. Having this, because, you know, even though it's just the two of us, it's validating. It's like, okay, right. So I didn't imagine all of this.
Right.
We went through this. Right. This is crazy.
So this might be 15 chapters. I don't know.
We might never do any more podcasts other than these.
Well, also, I combed all my documents for emails relevant to the pandemic topic. And we, of course, had many emails. Yeah. So at the end of this, I want to get into that. So, okay. So March 9, Italy shuts down. A listener actually emailed us from Italy. And I remember reading the email and she was like, or maybe DM'd me or something. She's like, can you talk about what's happening in Italy right now? Because it's really scary. They're telling us that we can't leave our house and we don't know what the future holds. Can we go to work? Is everyone going to die? It's really scary. And then you had these videos, these funny videos of politicians in Italy, like yelling at everyone. Do you remember this?
Yes.
Like saying, you, like people, like Italian public officials going, fucking idiots in Italian, you idiots, stay home or you will die.
Yeah.
If you leave your house, we will hunt you down and deal with you. I will personally punch your lights out if you leave your, I mean, these really over the top videos.
But because it was in Italian, it sounded like an opera.
And so, but anyway, so a listener emailed in, and I think we might have even talked about it on the podcast briefly, but it sounded otherworldly.
I mean, they were in dire straits.
Of course, Wuhan, China was already going through this, but somehow hearing about, you know, it's wrong, but even though I'm half Asian, hearing someone from Italy
It definitely feels closer.
It feels closer to home.
Yeah. And then you're seeing the news, like they're running out of hospital beds. Now they're the crematorium is like the whole thing. You're like, wait, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah. And at this point, I still am not thinking it's going to happen to us.
Yeah.
I still don't think that we're going to have an actual shutdown. Things are slowing down. People like Amazon workers and Microsoft work, people that can work at home or working from home. But
only because they can.
Only because they can. It's just like a suggestion.
It's 2 weeks. It's just 2 weeks.
Just a couple weeks. Yeah,
it was a 2 week shutdown.
And yeah, exactly. And I remember absolutely believing, especially when we actually did shut down, that like, well, yeah, I mean, you give it 2 weeks.
It dies out. Everyone, you know, if you have it, in 2 weeks, you're done.
You're dead or done.
Yeah.
And then it's over, right? So at this point, I'm like, we're not going to shut down. That's impossible. Now, I, at this point, should have taught in person, but like you decided against it. So the rest of the university was still in person, but I was like,
now your normal paranoia sets in.
Yeah. Actually, my notes were a little wonky. So I held my classes over Zoom on March 9th.
Okay.
But it wasn't a week later was when Antioch as a whole went over Zoom. And I remember I remember feeling a little goofy. I was emailing all my students saying, I think one student might have emailed me and said like, I don't feel comfortable. Are we safe going to class? And since I'm more on the edge of the spectrum of being worried, I used that as an excuse. I think I said, if my memory, I could look in the archives of my email, but I think I said something like, yeah, there's been a lot of concern. I'm sort of including my own concern in there. And so we're going to hold it over Zoom. And I remember a couple other students reached out to me and said, oh, thanks. Because I was also kind of worried about things, but I think most of the students were like,
we're like,
oh, okay. Well, I guess class is over Zoom now.
And by the way, so you're saying that was March 9th. That was a Tuesday. So that weekend right before that, the weekend of the 7th, that was our last trip as a family. We went to Seattle to the Burke Museum. Mm. And I remember being very worried because now I'm like completely...
I'm surprised that you even did it.
Because the reason we did it is because we thought, well...
There's not a lot of people.
We may not be able to do any more outings for a while.
Oh.
We had already promised it to the kids. And saying, yeah, it was like, well, the museum's not going to be packed. We also didn't go at like a peak time or something. So we went... But I was both my wife and I, because my wife was fully converted by then. We were both like, should we be doing this?
I mean, at this point, her job is still in person with a lot of people.
Yes.
And she's exposed all day long.
But they're about to not be.
But she doesn't know that at the time.
Yeah, we don't know that yet. I've already started working from home because I can.
Like, were you worried about even being affected by your wife?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, definitely.
Were you keeping her at a 10-foot pole?
No, but masking was happening.
Oh, in the house?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So March 9, the four of you are masking up.
Yeah. And when we went, we were masked.
Interesting.
So we're in the Burke Museum with masks.
Interesting.
They're not N95s, but
did you see anyone else in masks?
Maybe. I don't quite remember.
So let's do a little side thing about... the culture of masks, because in East Asia, which is the majority of the population of the world, especially when you include South Asia, masks are commonplace and have been for 20 years.
And by the way, for years, I looked at those pictures and I laughed. I'm like, what are those weirdos? What are they doing?
Yeah.
How crazy.
Or occasionally you'd see an East Asian in public in Seattle wearing a mask.
And I'm like, they're so paranoid.
Yeah. I don't know where I landed, but I certainly wasn't and it's hard to relate because
I was very xenophobic about it. Like,
oh, really?
That's maybe too extreme, but I always thought it was weird and unnecessary.
Yeah.
Like, why are they doing that?
I was a little partial to it, but I would have to admit that I was probably 90% in your camp, which is like, I think you're overly paranoid there. And of course, for them, they have...
They have bad air quality and constant waves of disease.
Right. And also less self-centeredness around those kinds of issues.
Yeah.
More science-based adherence or something.
And they're all packed super tightly in those cities.
Yeah.
You know.
So they've had a culture of like, yeah, you wear a mask, no big deal. And even for you and I, who are hypochondriac in a leaning,
right,
before the pandemic, wearing a mask was ridiculous.
Unheard of. So that day at the Burke Museum,
you know,
I felt really weird.
Yeah.
Wearing a mask.
But good for you that, you know, it could have saved you.
But
honestly,
that was the last thing we did for a very long time.
Yeah, for months.
And when you think about it, my kid, my little kid was 4 at the time.
Yeah.
And so at that age.
So tell me about that. So tell me, like, what difference, particularly the 4-year-old, well, I guess both, honestly.
It's so sad, man.
I mean, I think particularly for the 4-year-old, because that's such a, although I don't know, I could see it going either way, because I could see isolation at 4 being great.
No, this had a huge impact. Look, I'll say the following. Number one, so there was a very big positive, which was I got to spend more time with my kids than any parent in modern times history. I mean, I'm not saying just me. I mean, parents that got to stay home.
Yeah, yeah.
Because before this, even though I am someone who makes time, and I do, you know, I'm not like, okay, I'll see the kids, just kiss them goodnight. No, no, I spend time with them.
Yeah.
But come on, I'm at work, they're at school. Weekends, you're tired, so you do a couple activities.
Yeah.
This was different.
Yeah, so just an asterisk to this, of Stacy and I were able to spend 10 times more time together with this, which was definitely a pro.
Yeah.
And no commute. Definitely a pro.
You get so close. Like, oh, that's the other thing. Me and my wife, same thing, where we realized, oh my gosh, we have spent so much time together now. Mm-hmm. Now, so all those are positives.
Because just the contrast with your life in the past and mine as well.
Yeah.
You know, Monday morning, you get up.
I don't see her usually because she leaves before I'm even
off. If you see your family, it's just like, hi, bye. You commute.
Yeah.
Maybe you work 9-10 hours.
Yeah.
You commute home. You got to get all your crap together. You got to get the kids ready for dinner. And everyone's running around. You eat dinner. You clean up.
And it's almost time for bedtime.
It's almost time for bed.
Yeah.
And on the weekends, you're doing errands.
Yeah.
And so when do you have time to just hang with the kids? Just like hang time. Maybe a Sunday every other week or an outing or a trip you go on. Whereas literally every day.
Every day, all hours of the day.
I mean, even
when I'm working, they're still walking by. They're coming by. Oftentimes, my little one would sit on my lap while I was in meetings.
Yeah. Like I would, Stacy and I working at home, we would take a break. Normally, when you're in the office, you take a break, you chat with
an
office mate or you walk down the street or something. But you take a break at home.
You do that with your family.
You interact with your family.
So those were all amazing positives.
Yeah.
Another weird positive for both myself and my kids and stuff was how much time we actually spent in the house. Because again, you think, well, you live in the place. But if you work in modern times, you're out of the house a lot. And on the weekends, you're traveling, you're going and stuff.
Yeah,
like
and
that.
So I think, to put a fine point on it, is I think it illuminated just how fucked up our lives were normally.
Yeah.
Because that's fucked up.
Yeah.
That it was culturally normal.
Yes.
To never see your family.
Never see your family. Barely enjoy the things you have. Yeah, totally. Now, here's the toll that I noticed. So before the pandemic, I had these daddy-daughter days that I would take my daughters with. When my old eldest was an only child before we had the second one. Dude, that was a highlight for me and for her, right? It was like, we'd have these trips to Seattle and we'd go, okay, today we're going to the Space Needle. Or some other time it was like, we're going to go to the Berg Museum, or we're going to go to the EMP, or we're going to go to the Flight Museum. They were big deals. And sometimes they were family trips, all of us, or sometimes it was just daddy, daughter.
Meaning just one of your daughters.
Right. And then when my second daughter was born, I would do both. I would like alternate and sometimes do both daughters. And then sometimes it was all four of us. And it was great.
Yeah.
We took her to zoos, the aquarium, like all these things. We had memberships, all that. The pandemic hits, all that goes away. And my little 4-year-old at the time didn't get so many of those. Now, again, we're spending more time together, so that's good. But we're not doing these little outings and these things. Now,
she feels like she's ripped off.
Yeah. And I feel, in a way, like,
short. And your older one's entering into a phase where she's a little less concerned.
Right. And she starts seeking more independence. She's more about her friends. And The second thing that has been weird, especially with the little one, and it's getting a little better, but it's taken like a year. She got so homebound that she didn't want to go anywhere. So then we're like, oh, we're going on a trip. I don't want to go. I just want to be home. They're like, oh, we're going to go visit Nana. We haven't seen her in months. I don't want to go.
Yeah, usually at that age, right. They're like, yay.
You're going to spend a couple nights at Nana's because daddy and mommy are like, no, tears, like freaking out. Whereas with our eldest, we used to drop her off for a week at Nana's. This was a big difference.
Yeah.
And again, even till now.
Well, yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, you and I were terrified. Imagine being that age without the ability to control your life, without any emotional regulation skills that you hopefully will get at some point.
Yeah.
The amount of terror and trauma,
yeah,
of watching society and your parents and yourself in a constant state of danger.
And that she doesn't really remember before that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like 3 years old.
Yeah.
Like that she has teeny little memories. So the majority of her memories of being little is like, well, yeah, it's a pandemic and I'm at home.
And I'm in extreme danger.
And there's danger.
And daddy can't protect me.
Yeah, dude. I think that trauma.
I can't imagine.
It's crazy. So it is scary to think what's going to happen to a lot of that generation.
Yeah.
Without enough therapy and all these things.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that has been
a things were already getting. That's the other thing is like this compounded a trend that was already happening, which was increased anxiety, increased depression, increased suicidality, increased isolation,
yeah,
increased worries of transmissible diseases, this kind of thing, fewer connections, fewer support, more staying at home, more video games, more computer time, more screen time. It was already heading that direction for a good 20 years, and the pandemic just put like 10 final nails in that coffin.
Yeah, this one was down to 11 final nails.
So have you, so what about the older one? Because the older one, I'm guessing, would have been much more friend-oriented at that point, and thus, for a while, couldn't see your friends, right?
Yeah.
But you had your neighbors that you were in a pod with, right?
Well, yes, although there was periods of time where we couldn't,
yeah,
because we were both very paranoid. Then what we started allowing is masked outside play. So the neighbors, we didn't go in each other's houses for like a year and a half, right? I mean, from March of 2020 till end of 2021. No, what am I talking about? I think it was 2022 when we finally went in each other's houses. So that was bizarre too.
Even though you're all vaccinated.
Yeah.
I guess the kids weren't vaccinated yet.
No. Well, you're right.
Kids weren't allowed to be vaccinated.
That's why we couldn't. Yes. So it was until 2022 when the kids were vaccinated that finally we went back in each other's houses and not like all the time.
Yeah.
So think about that, right? Like, so you have these friends. So
things still haven't returned to normal.
Now it's fine. Like we had, well, it's mostly fine. Like we had our New Year's party. People were over. No one was masking. It was great times.
Okay.
I mean, obviously everyone's still kind of, no, that's not even true. Some of our neighbors that we invited did wear masks the whole time, now that I'm remembering.
Now, I will say that I've talked with a lot of people, clients, students of mine, friends with younger kids and high school age kids who suffered greatly.
Yeah.
The pain, the anxiety, the conflict. You know, one example that I ran into a fair amount with my students, because, you know, I'd be teaching over Zoom.
And
the point is there was a fair amount of years. Well, so it would have from March 2020 until the last class I taught, which was at the end of 2021. So for almost 2 years, I was teaching online. You know, a fair amount of the students have kids, naturally. The students are at home and the kids are in the other room or are in the background. And so there's a fair amount of, you just notice things happening as a professor. And we would talk about it at times as well. And there was a lot of different experiences. But one of the themes was that, you know, a kid of a certain age really wants to hang out with their parents.
Yep.
In the past, the parents would go to work and the kid would go to daycare or go to grandma's.
So you had a natural separation.
There's a separation there. There's not an attractive nuisance. The kid... And I would observe this when my mom had a daycare at home. The kids would get dropped off, and the kids, as the parents are leaving, would be upset but give the kid 5 minutes and the kid is fine. The parents walk in the door and the kid breaks down again.
Yeah.
But there's this, there's an 8 hour gap there where the kid is emotionally fine because they can't see the parents not being with them. You know? Whereas over Zoom class, the kids would know on the other side of the bedroom door is my mommy. And she is not only right there, but she's actively rejecting me for 3 or 4 hours. You know what I mean? She's telling me she doesn't want me in the room with her, you know?
Right, right.
That's heartbreaking.
That's heartbreaking.
And you would have kids. And if,
and
course,
as a little kid, even though you could be explained why, you don't get it.
No. 4-year-olds are not rational human beings.
No, no, no.
Even 8-year-olds have a tough time with that. Even with a 12-year-old who rationally understands it, it still hurts, right? So it was really rough on some. And then you have potentially some kids that are special needs, it gets even harder, right?
Oh my
so
gosh,
I would see these and I would feel terrible because, you know, I'm requiring attendance from these students, you know? And of course we would get flexible at times. And if a student was like, I got to deal with, you know, cause they would be on mute. So I wouldn't hear what was happening and they would unmute themselves and be like,
I'm sorry,
so Mike, and then all of a sudden you hear this kid just screaming off camera and the student would be like, yeah, I'm having an issue, so I'm terribly sorry. And I would always 100% just be like, do what you gotta do, because times are weird right now, you know?
I mean, this happened to me frequently where I was in a meeting, a serious meeting where I might even be talking, it might be a tense meeting, and all of a sudden my 4-year-old pops in and everyone was very understanding. She sits on my lap. You know, she had to be quiet, but she could be with me. And I usually made it a point to still be receptive to that. But I didn't even think about the fact that if she were 2, that would be even harder because now she's not quiet, right?
Or and you're telling her to be quiet.
And you're like, quiet, or no, now I can't have you. And you're right. It's like rejection,
yeah.
Rejection, rejection. The other thing that helped is basically my wife took a break from working and she was basically my 4-year-old's teacher. You know, she was just like teaching her preschool stuff, right? So they got to spend a lot of time together, which is great, and also made it difficult when she went back to school, when my 4-year-old, when my then 5 and then 6, yeah, whenever 5, I don't remember what age she went back to school, but because it's like she had had mommy teacher.
Right.
And now it's like, wait, so that was hard too.
Yeah. Now, on the other hand, what's the alternative? You never see your kid at all and your kid forgets you exist? You know, I don't know. So I feel like
a balance somewhere.
Yeah, because you know the alternative is like, well, you make sure you always work in the office and never see your kid all day. I just feel like it really illuminated a lot of things. The pandemic, the fact that we never see our family members, I think, was the fact that it just becomes common, normal.
Yeah.
That like, well, yeah, of course, you have a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday. You see your family frantically while you're in a frenzy of activity from 6:30 to 8:30, and then you fall asleep in front of the TV, and then you do chores all day on Saturday, and maybe you see your kids kind of, and then Sunday you might have an outing, or you might actually be spending time with your friends at that, you know. So that was just normal life, and so this illuminated that. The other thing it illuminated was just how stupid we are about having to work in offices. There was so much, and I've been railing about this for a long time because when I worked at the university, when I started working there full time, because I've always, you know, I've mainly worked at home as a self-employed person.
Right.
But when I became a full-time person at the university in the aughts, my home was literally across the street from the university. So I would go home. I had my own office as a professor at the university, but I preferred being home. And I found that the energy level I had and the mood I was in and the productivity that I could achieve while at home was far greater than what I was in the office.
I am so efficient at home.
Yeah.
When it comes to work stuff, because
people don't interrupt you with like
crazy.
Who has a case of the Mondays.
No. It is so efficient. In other words, the downside is it's true. I don't socialize much with my coworkers. That is true. But I don't know if that, maybe it turns out that that's not a must have.
It's not a must. It's a bummer. That is a loss.
Yeah.
And I do lament that. I if you would have asked me, and maybe I even thought this, is that a tremendous loss at the time? I'd say no. But after it being gone from my life for so long, it does bum me out. It feels good to have, even at those little dumb, small talky interactions with people, especially over the long term.
I will say that, so one of the people that works in my group, she sets up bi-weekly or monthly, I can't remember, but it's a regular 2-hour block of time where we just play games, like
over Zoom.
Over Zoom, yeah. Like we just play.
Yeah.
And
does that get that fixed?
It definitely is awesome. It is good. We have fun. There's no work talk at all. We literally just play. And so I do get to know people a little better that way. It doesn't replace it in that I have not made any friends. Like, no, now we're friends. Other than there's one person that actually you've met.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But as I say that, I'm also at a different place in my life where
right.
when I was younger, all my friends came from work or school. Now, I don't have time to make that many new friends.
Yeah, I kind of feel like this is another thing that I thought about when I was prepping, was that the pandemic accelerated or pushed me into my age or something. Because even at the age of 49, yeah. when the pandemic started, I was still kind of behaving like I was in my 30s or 20s.
Yeah, yeah.
My lifestyle.
Right.
Going to clubs, going to live music, still having the same vibe with friends and activities and yeah. parties and socializing and chaotic life. And the pandemic made me my age or push me past or something yeah. where now I'm like, why would I want to leave the house when people are out there? You know what I mean? And that's not age, but it is, I'm a much more stable person now. There's pros and cons, I guess, is the thing, you know, like a different focus, a different priority set, if you will. But anyway, let's adjourn there, chapter two. And when we pick up on chapter three, I think with chapter two, Berto, we made it 1 week of
into the
of my, or maybe 10 days of my timeline.
Great.
So
that's great.
That's quite an accomplishment.
Yes.
And when we tune in next time, when we continue with chapter 3, in which we start with March 10. And everyone out there, please take care of yourself, because
you deserve it.